And we're back on the Rule of Three. Tim Slagle, Brian Miller. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. It's we're going to be talking in a little bit about the holiday. It's okay, guys. Yeah, no shopping on this one.
And that's true.
It's well, maybe there's some shopping involved, but we're going to tease that out. One of our brothers in comedy has run into a little bit of trouble, and we're going to take some schadenfreude over that.
This is breaking news, by the way. This broke like last night, so we're on the cutting edge of comedy news.
Well, yeah, assuming we get this one posted in the next couple days. But our first topic, it's a couple days late, but everyone's still talking about them crazy Oscars. Is of course not that it was the least watched Oscars in history.
Wasn't it the lowest?
I don't know about the lowest because the lowest in nine years. Yeah, nobody really paid attention to the Oscars in the early days.
Right. Yeah, they were. Well, and so you can only, especially when you consider its population size, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe measuring it against the last decade is about the only way to really be honest about it.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the Oscars were considered kind of a prurient thrill. It was something that you know, the young girls were obsessed with. Not something that adults would occupy their time with. It never really pop culture was not as prevalent in people's lives back in the back 50 years ago or
right.
So.
Well, and you know what? Similarly, the Super Bowl was just like, oh, it's a football game. The Oscars and the Super Bowl had probably a similar ascendancy in terms of like, terms of their like rather sudden ubiquity.
Huh, that's a really good point.
Well, you know, it's funny, they say the Oscars have been called the gay Super Bowl, but Mike Pence says he's got a program that can turn the Oscars into the regular Super Bowl.
I always looked at the Super Bowl as the straight Oscars. That's,
See, absolutely, right? Other side of the coin.
The big news is the final moment that everyone's waiting for, that you've actually foregone a full night's sleep for, that you've sat through in measurable, intolerable acceptance speeches is the Beck's picture. I mean, that is the prize of the prize.
It's really the last like 12 minutes of the Oscars. They do about 60% of the real business. You know, they hit actor, actress, and best picture, best director, and best picture right in a row, usually right there at the end. And you're like, man, we could have done this in like 45 minutes, guys.
Yeah, but how many ads are you going to sell?
Right.
How much is a Super Bowl ad? Or not a Super Bowl. How much is an Oscar? But see, look, I'm confusing them. This damn gender confusion that's sweeping the nation. Now I'm confusing my Super Bowl with my Oscars.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think it's quite as high as the Super Bowl, but I'm sure the end a lot. You know,
you don't know. You knew the Super Bowl. You knew the Super Bowl price.
You know, you did not know. Yes, well, they always publicize it. Plus, I would bet you that Super Bowl prices are pretty consistent because people watch the whole Super Bowl. I bet Oscar ads start real high and start to decline as the evening wears on.
That is likely.
Because a lot of people talk about never not making it to the end of the Oscars. They start, they watch the monologue, they watch a few things. But, I mean, nobody watches the first quarter of the Super Bowl and then quits. It's like, that's not how sports works.
It's stacked kind of like a late night talk show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that the late night talk show, you got the monologue to ease from the news into the show. Then you've got the big star is always the first one up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they always do supporting actress or something really big up top. You know, they get a few. They always start big, and then they start petering off into like best sound editing for a short, semi animated foreign documentary. I think it's all the. Here's the thing: the musical numbers should be good. The musical numbers should be like, oh, this is keeping the show going. A little bit of music, but the songs that are nominated for best song of the Oscar, no one likes. It's all crap from kids' movies. It's all crap from kids' movies. It drives me nuts.
Well, not this year.
Wasn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Well, Justin Timberlake sang a song from a movie that was based on trolls. Not even real trolls. He sang a song from a movie based on the little things you put at the end of your pencil erasers.
Yeah.
That to me was like, I almost turned the whole thing off right there.
But there wasn't any La La Land.
There was a La La Land. There was there was like a song from Moana. I mean, it's not even we can't get five songs for adults on the Oscars, apparently. It's impossible. You can get one song for adults, maybe two.
Well, it's because there's no musicals anymore.
Yeah, but
that's what it is.
They used to do
only the kids' movies, and I don't know why. I don't know why kids. People think that kids like the musical numbers. So they put the musical numbers in the kids' films. Because I remember as a kid, it's like that was like when you'd go out to get popcorn is when Baloo the Bear started singing. It's you really didn't care about the songs in the movies.
Yes.
In the cartoons. It was like that was always the stupid part. It's, you know, you wanted the chaotic scene, the actual cartoon. But at least for me, I wanted the cartoon part. I want the part where the plot pies start flying or the...
Something gets scary happens or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, or the monster comes out. That was what I always wanted. And then it's like musical numbers. God, I remember, even as a kid, it was, why did the guy put so much singing in these stupid cartoons?
I'm with you. I'm not a musical fan at all. But so the big moment, of course, the envelope comes out, and they is the wrong envelope. And I'll tell you, were you watching it live?
No.
I was definitely watching it live by myself, and the most confusing thing about it was there was a threefold confusion when they say, there's been a mistake. At first I think, oh, is this guy doing like the Ving Rhames, hey Jack Lemmon, you're my inspiration, I'm giving you this Oscar. You know, is he basically trying to like look like a mensch while he's accepting his Oscar or whatever, right? And then he's saying there's a mistake, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, Jimmy Kimmel's been doing pranks all night long. Surely this can't be some Jimmy Kimmel prank, right? And so the whole thing caused so much confusion that even after it happened, I was still like, what did I just see? Because in the moment, you hadn't had it contextualized as
right. This
was a mistake.
No, when I clicked on the headline, it was wrong Best Picture announced. So, I mean, I was, you know, spoiler right there. I knew what I was watching.
Right. In the moment, though... I mean, my mind was going all around, and then instantly I was like, oh, there's a little part of my brain that like is like, oh, there's going to be some conspiracy theories that aren't maybe the least founded, that, you know, the Miss Universe pageant was not doing so well, and Steve Harvey screwed up the winners, and the next year the Miss Universe pageant was very highly rated.
Well, it is kind of interesting. It is kind of interesting that the two films that were mentioned were probably the two favorites for Hollywood. Number one was the self-aggrandizement of La La Land, and the other one was the one that won Moonlight. They wanted that one to win.
You know, Moonlight there's always a movie every year that's like the little movie that everyone says they loved that, according to box office, pretty much no one saw. Right? I think The Piano was probably like that the year that came out. I mean, it's pretty rare that like one of the big movies wins. And this year, I would assume part of the low ratings are attributable to the fact that there were very few movies that were particularly popular nominated at all. Even more so, or fewer than regular, I would say.
Right. But as far as the Moonlight thing, I mean, look, in retrospect, I probably should have put some money on that because there was so much a big deal made last Oscars about the fact that it was the white Oscars.
And La La Land being like the whitest movie. It is literally about a white jazz pianist, which is pretty hard to find.
But the interesting thing to me, one of the portions of the scandals of last year was, you know, there just are no roles for people of color in Hollywood. Is that it's all, you know, if you're a person of color, the only auditions you go to are gang members and drug dealers. So what movie wins? A movie about a gang member drug dealer who's gay.
That is an undeniable fact.
That made it better. It's okay. It's a gay drug dealing gang member.
So what do you wrap it up here? Do you think there's going to be any fallout from this, or what's your thought on the conspiracy element of it?
Uh, The only conspiracy, I think what happened, I think Warren Beatty saw an envelope that said best actress, and he figured that it was addressed to him.
And on that note, we'll see you in the next segment. Second segment of Rule of Three. Well, actually, on the third segment, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite holidays, an under-the-radar holiday. But first, a little comedy news. Jamie Kilstein. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with him. Jamie Kilstein was probably a bigger name, at least to me, maybe in like late 2010, 2011, I feel like he used to see him around the clubs more often.
Yeah, he was, definitely. He was he was on the cusp. He was the next big thing.
Yeah, he was like possibly, you know, people are like, oh, this is going to be like the new, more radical Daily Show type guy. He's described in this article as a comedian and activist. Just to tease the topic too long, he's been fired from his own radio show by his ex-wife. That's tough, by the way. Fired from his own radio show by his ex-wife amid allegations of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct is how it's phrased here. Now, I'll say here real quick. It's funny. A lot of people on Twitter have denounced him instantly, so fast that it would lead me to believe that everybody – not that they knew anything was up, but that people just didn't like him and were really excited.
That's where I am on that, is that I never, you know, I don't like to speak ill of other comics.
Me too. Because
I used to do it a lot, and I realize it's really not good for your career.
Mm-hmm.
However, I never got Jamie Kilstein. Let me finish here.
Oh, sure.
The best example I've heard, if you guys don't know, the audience does not know, the best description I've heard of Jamie Kilstein's comedy is that it is for liberals what Christian comedy is for Christians.
Yeah, or like I would almost go even further and say what Christian rock is, just to make it more insulting. It's choir preaching to the nth degree, but what always drove me nuts was I met him once and he wasn't very nice. So there's that. But
yeah, that too.
Beyond that, what always drove me nuts is I came to comedy from the world of news. I was a newspaper editor for several years. For a brief little time there, I was trying to be like a magazine writer, you know, and I published a few pieces and then I started doing comedy and I thought, I like this a lot better. And so I just kind of went full steam into comedy and sort of left all the news stuff behind. But I had just been like traveling to, you know, I went to the Republican National Convention and the Green Party National Convention and covered them for different publications and, you know, on the ground stuff, you know, eating lunch next to Jeremy Scahill. And, you know, I was a lefty reporter, I mean, I was writing for magazines, not like straight news. And it always drove me nuts that when I would see Kilstein's act, I was like, all he's doing is saying stuff that every lefty reporter, you know, from the nation would say and be like, well, yeah, obviously. But he's just doing it at a comedy club, so people think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I always said that his act really was like reading the nation and adding obscenities. Like if you just cursed a lot while you read an Alexander Cockburn column from The Nation, it was pretty much – it was the same thing.
And it's – yeah, that probably – that's the probably why everything stalled. It got to a point and it's – you know, I know that – A lot of times, you know, conservative comics do that too. They put the politics in front of the comic part. It's, you know, you say it last, but it should be first. You know, the important thing about being a comic is being funny.
Yeah, and it extends not just to politics, but even to like the comics who like to do kind of personal confessional stuff, which I like. You know, I like really personal comedy, but like. Yeah, man, if you want to tell me about some sad stuff that happened to you as a kid, I'm down. But everything has to be funny first. Everything always has to be funny first. And then you can talk about whatever you want. But you can't be like, well, that was a thing that really happened to me. Yeah, but you didn't make it funny, and we're in a comedy club.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you're not in a theater. It's I might have said this before because I know I say it a lot. The difference between a one-man show and a stand-up comedy is that in comedy, when you have a minute of pure silence, you're bombing. If you're an actor, you're killing.
Yeah, so absolutely true. And there's nothing wrong with that one-man show type thing, if you know. But just put it where it's supposed to be, you know.
As Jay Leno said about juggling in comedy clubs, is I don't try to do stand up in a circus.
Yeah, I'm with him on that one. I agree. But you know, it's been interesting. You know, and now I'll say this. Now, just because I don't particularly enjoy Jamie Kilstein's style, hey, you know what? If people like it, that's cool. You know, there's a lot of different styles I love. There's a lot of them I don't. I never understood people who are like angry at people for doing something they don't enjoy. I'm like, I don't know. Just don't watch it. There's a zillion comics out there. One of the things that's been interesting is, you know, Kilstein is the kind of guy who would really go hard at perceived enemies, say, or I don't know how to.
Sure.
Yeah. And so
sure,
the idea.
Sure, sure. Know, he probably, I am guessing that he did a lot of Donald Trump cat jokes.
Yes, yes, and a lot of calling out other people for being sexist, misogynist, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, probably a lot of wide stance jokes.
Yep,
as well.
Yep.
So the
kind of hypocrisy of it, I think, it really, really rankles people, and it is one of those communities where, like, if you get accused of something like that within the feminist activist community, you can better bet. You are going to be out so fast.
Perhaps.
Well, once it's out, I'm not saying it. Oh, it exists because now. So the kind of subtopic I think is interesting is the whole male feminist thing. I was telling you this off air, and I'll throw my thesis at you and let you see what you think of it. But it kind of drives me crazy because I'm a guy who's married to a very successful woman who's a businesswoman. You know, she has more degrees than I do. And I always try to book women comics on shows I'm on. Whenever I would make an open mic, I would always try to balance.
She is Fahrenheit to your Celsius.
Yes, right. And so all these things. But so sometimes people would like say, I've had people say to me that like I'm a bad person if I don't self-identify as a feminist. And yet there's all these other enthusiastically self-identifying male feminists who are just doing it as a power manipulation, sometimes to gaslight women into doing things they don't want to do. Which is even more insidious. And I would always say to people, if you want to find
what do you mean gaslight women into doing stuff they don't want to do?
Gaslighting is a term where you
I know that. But what are those things that they don't want to do?
Sex.
Are you,
you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no,
it's like, he's one of the good ones, right? He says he's one of the good ones.
I'm just clarifying.
Oh yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it could be it's like I know you don't want to work for Fox News, honey, but I'm actually a feminist. There's a lot of things that women might not want to do that the cover of feminism would be used to get them to do. I just wanted to make sure that you're talking about guys that feign feminism because it's a great way to bed chicks.
Yeah. And also to win arguments with people if you don't really have a good argument. You know, I think sometimes people are racist or misogynist or whatever. That does happen. But also, it's a great way to shut down an argument if you don't have a good one.
I mean, that's so prevalent right now. It's like, just what I need to do is listen to somebody mansplain.
Right. Yeah, it's like, well, as a guy, if I explain my point, I'm inherently mansplaining, I guess.
Well, no, if you're explaining a point that I disagree with, you're mansplaining.
Right.
And that's the thing, too. As a feminist man, is you're accorded that ability.
Yeah, I've never liked the thing where you have to waive your credentials before you speak. You know? And so my thing was always with the whole male feminist thing is, why don't you just look at guys and see how they behave and how they treat the women around them? And if it all appears to be genuinely good, that's good. Leave it alone. I don't understand. The label thing seems to me a weird demand. Yeah. And then also, I'm mildly mistrustful of anybody who's so eager to waive those credentials.
Right. To me, I've always thought that feminism is just another level of vegetarianism. I think a lot of guys become vegetarians because it's a great way to meet pale, skinny chicks.
I love pale, skinny chicks.
Yeah.
I like pale, curvy chicks too, actually. But I think I just like girls who aren't good with the sun. But I agree. And it always sort of felt like getting involved in someone else's issue. Like if I'm like, I want to support, I want to support black rights, but it's sort of weird to me to walk in and be like, hey, you guys, I'm going to be the mayor of the Black Rights March. You're like, what?
okay, Ms. DeLozzle.
Yeah. And so, but it is very interesting, and it'll be interesting to see the blowback on this, because I think that's definitely, I think this is something the culture is really going to have to wrestle with. And
we could wrestle with it more if we weren't out of time. Final segment of the Rule of Three. If you don't know, today is a holiday. It is actually Mardi Gras, which is French for Tuesday Fat.
Yes, well, Fat it's, Tuesday.
yeah, I know, but they invert it.
They do.
I don't want people thinking Mardi means fat.
Je parle plus français.
No, not at all.
Oh, I do. No, je is me. Tu ne parles pas français. You do not speak French.
No, I do. I do not.
Look at me, Mr. Culture.
I don't need. I don't need to be bilingual. I was raised speaking English.
I don't understand that, but okay.
That's my ugly American remark for the day.
Oh, I got it.
But it's actually true. Is most people that are bilingual, their second language is English.
Well, for a long time. I mean, Chinese probably will be soon, but it was the international language of business.
Yeah. Yeah, so when people learn, so people that speak English tend not to be bilingual. I mean, people say, "Oh, Europeans are all bilingual." Well, no, the ones that don't speak English are the English. Pretty much, that's it.
Fair point. I do like those. I like the French, but even more than the French, I like the dirty French in the South. I like that whole Cajun culture to me, the whole Creole thing. I just love it. Cajun food is my favorite. The whole vibe. I've always been a big fan.
Sure. It's what somebody said once is that New Orleans is what happens when you let Catholics grow wild.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, a fascinating mashup of basically it's basically voodoo and Catholicism.
Oh, yeah.
Which is – I went to a really super liberal arts college it was a Catholic university, but so liberal that my religion class was about voodoo. But it was actually really fascinating to see how Santeria forms from like the mashup of like Haitian culture and all this stuff comes together. And you get where the people have like what we would think of pagan iconography and the saints, and it's all blended up, and it's a fascinating cultures.
The first time I walked into a Santeria store, I did not realize it. I thought it was a Catholic supply store.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't till I got all the way to the back and I saw all the herbs and potions in the back. And then picked up a couple of the candles and actually read what they said. Until that, I thought it was just a Catholic store. It's very, very close. But I think for me, Fat Tuesday is it's more than just the French, even though that's the one that's the name we all stick to it. It's also Carnival in South America. It is I don't know about in Poland, but at least in places in America where the Polish have settled, it is also Punchki Day.
Oh, really?
You're not aware of this?
I'm not.
A punchki is a very heavy, filled donut.
So it's all Polish food.
It's
very heavy filled.
Dusted. Yes, it's fried. It's dusted with powdered sugar, and it's just stuffed with jelly or cheese or custard, and it's really quite delicious. And that's the Polish celebration, is to eat punchki. And the idea, of course, is that tomorrow is Ash Wednesday.
Yep.
And the fasting, 40 days of fasting, begins. So it's the, I like to refer to it as the annual pagan celebration of binge and purge.
Yeah, absolutely. That's about spot on. I've always thought it was funny. I've always thought it was interesting as a kid, the idea, you know, I was raised in a fairly religious Christian household. There's all these rules. They're very important. But then there's all these ways that we're always kind of getting around the rules. Like, oh, God says we can't eat too much between these days, so we'll trick him. We'll eat a ton the night before. And I was always like, well, really? Who's the joke on here? Like, I don't know that we're putting one over on anybody.
It's you know what? I think the older a faith becomes, the more things like that occur. Is Judaism has a lot of that.
Oh, right. You tie a string to your doorknob so you can go visit your neighbor on Shabbos.
Yeah. It's or put the wire around Manhattan.
Yeah, or should the whole concept of the Shabbos goy
is but the strangest thing to me is the refrigerator. Is that it's okay to open the refrigerator, but it's not okay to turn on a light.
Oh, so technically you'd have to unscrew your refrigerator bulb
before sundown on Friday. Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, I think
is modern refrigerators now have kosher settings.
Really?
Yeah, you can set your refrigerator so that the light will go off at sundown on Friday, and then not come on till sundown on Saturday.
And automatically. If you put pepperoni in it, it goes danger, danger, danger.
but it's all the laws of God have loopholes. It's, I guess you can't really fault people for finding loopholes in the Constitution, because there are laws older than the Constitution that people still have strived to reinterpret into the living, breathing rule of laws of God.
Yeah, that's totally accurate, I think.
But the idea of the New Orleans celebration, of course, is 2 weeks of sin. You get all the sinning out of the way for 2 weeks, and you put a mask on so people don't see that you're sinning, and then you don't sin for 40 days, and then
back to sinning.
Back to sinning.
Back to a regular pace of sinning, not the accelerated pre-Lent pace. By the way, have you seen the HBO show Treme?
I have.
I don't know, but I love that show. And I think it's a great portrait of New Orleans culture. And I was fascinated by, and then would later looked up a bunch of stuff about the Mardi Gras Indians, which is this whole other interesting culture, you know, the
Zulu crew.
Yeah, where they put on the really elaborate beaded costumes and do these like,
yeah, the suit of light.
Yeah, boy, what a fascinating thing. It's so
it's so foreign. It's a friend of mine who lived there for a couple of years says it's a lot closer to being a banana republic than actually a major city in the United States.
Oh, it's always kind of famously kind of been flimsily safe, as it were. It doesn't seem to take much to tip New Orleans into chaos. But I will say, you know, this is one of the reasons I kind of lament the internet and the loss of regionalism, is these are the kind of things that really can only happen when regionalism is intense, because you get these internal cultures that kind of get plenty of chance to stew, and they don't disperse too much, and they don't blend with other stuff. So you get these like weird traditions that then when they go out, you know, that's how you get these different forms of music. And I wonder how that'll work when we don't have like, it's basically like the bread doesn't have time to bake when it all goes out into the ether right away.
Well, the thing is with New Orleans is that it's actually it's even though it is on the same internet that everybody else is, there's a certain defiance to accept the cultures of, you know, the cultural homogeny that's occurring around it. For instance, comedy has never there's never been a comedy club successful in New Orleans.
No, in fact, Sean Patton is a great comedian from New Orleans, and he's like, yeah, I had to get the heck out of there. There wasn't any comedy.
Exactly. So that I do believe that the music traditions and the other things will not fade. You know, I think it'll probably be like it's like an Amish community in the middle of, yes, in the middle absolutely. Of Columbus, Ohio.
No, I guess what I lament is the formation of future versions of those kind of – or new versions of that, because you do have to have that – a little bit of isolation in these regions to have that sort of stuff sort of have chance to ferment into its own thing.
Yeah, I actually being on the road for so many years, I actually saw the monoculture grow. It initially it started with the malls, with the malls kind of homogenized fashion, and then what really solidified the homogenization though was MTV, I believe.
Interesting.
Until MTV, there would be renegade music. You know, like punk rock sprouted up. But what MTV happened is that everybody was kind of into the same music at the same time, and the cultural homogeny kind of occurred.
Yeah. Maybe the internet's ability to facilitate niches will kind of take that function over.
Right. But the trouble is that there's no regionalism to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely.
Whereas before it was defined by region, you know, as Detroit punk was different than Chicago punk was different than LA punk. And now it's, you know, gamer punk is different than video casting punk is different than, you know, skate punk. It's that everybody can belong to these tribes with absolutely no geographic connection between them.
Yeah. And as somebody who travels around a lot, I mean, don't you find some of your favorite places to visit are the ones that have the most distinct regional vibe?
Oh, yeah. Always was. Well, to some extent, you know.
Well, yeah, I found, south, as it were.
No, I found as I grew older... is I didn't like playing hit and miss, you know, because sometimes you'll find a regional treasure, and sometimes it's just a truck stop with crappy food.
Well, there's and that.
There was something to be said for the consistency of an old country buffet in a faraway town.
Yeah, I don't know. I like to take my chance. I still do my best to always go to local places when I'm there and everything, and try to. You can sometimes still find little pockets of that stuff if you look for it, but it is. I miss going to a place and knowing I'm in a different place. You know, like three cities away. You know, like, but this is different.
Right. And speaking of finding, you can find all these episodes at timslegel.com or on iTunes.
Yep, or at at BrianMillerComedy.com at the website. And happy Mardi Gras, everybody.
Mardi Gras.
See you next time.